All right, let's bring this meeting to order. It's the August 6th, 2013 Conservation Commission meeting in the City Hall Chambers. And the first item on the agenda are the minutes from July 16th. Comments? Oh, you're right. Oh, okay. There's only three of us, so, well, we can still ratify it if we want to. Doug, Jim, anything? Julie, anything?
I have nothing.
Okay. Motion?
Move to approve.
All in favor? All right. Opposed? Okay. All right, first thing, since Sheila's not here, we'll move the first, if I can open the right thing here.
Oh, I need to print out those regs.
First item would be the land subject to coastal storm flowage regulations. Has anybody had a chance to go through any of that stuff that I sent around? Okay.
Yeah, it was interesting. Where did you find the references to the legal, you know, like the liability stuff?
That is on the, let me see, I actually have the site open here. It's the Association of State Floodplain Managers.
Okay.
And the no adverse impact site on there, yeah, there's all legal issues and everything.
Okay.
Because a lot of that stuff, you know, going through it, I haven't read every word in all those write-ups, but it seems like it's happening more and more where municipalities are getting sued for allowing building that allows floodplains to be filled. You know, it's, and on the other hand, it looks like judges are backing commissions and regulatory bodies that are trying to prevent that, because, you know, people sue them and for not allowing them to do it, but they're backing it. And, you know, in general, the flooding issues we have here and having a coastal river like we do, the future with sea level rise, it's going to affect us more. And it's not just going to be Plum Island, because the stuff's, and also with us, and I mentioned it before, the amount of rain coming down is increasing too. And we're like in the swath of increased rainfall, which means during these big storms, where we're going to get the biggest storm surge, there's going to be more, generally going to be more water coming down the river, and they're all going to meet right down here. So
how much of the downtown is in what is considered floodplain?
A good portion. I wish I had that.
Yeah, I wish I had the map. You can bring it up on the computer through the My Map.
Yeah.
But it's not, you know, it comes in and out kind of like this. There's portions of Water Street, then in some areas it comes in like up Harrison or Neptune a little bit, and then comes back down. It definitely fluctuates, and in town it comes in and out. It's portions of the central waterfront are in, portions are out. Mm. So, you know, it doesn't come out to Merrimack Street really in very many places, except for like Shawnee.
Yes, it does come up to Water Street in a couple spots.
Where National Grid is, that's...
Yeah.
I think it's closer to here, actually, because I have
comes into
brought this stuff up.
Like, you know, the Waterfront Trust parking lot.
Been working on it.
Comes up into the dirt lots a little bit.
Comes up a good way into the dirt lot.
That's interesting, because coming out of one of the concerts there this past week, I saw that DigSafe marking for GZA, which would be a boring, is for the feasibility of putting, you know, underground parking on the waterfront.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which,
I think it's, yeah.
You can build something anywhere if you want to bring up money into it.
Well, right. It's a matter of what kind of investment do they want to make in a location like that? Oh,
we locked
out?
We
locked out. Oh my God, how'd you guys get in? All right, I'll be right there.
Door's unlocked.
All right.
That would be
Gretchen throwing rocks at the window.
Was it wasn't locked for you guys, was it?
No.
No. Well, it was actually a jar for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll wait for Julia to get back. I actually bought the D-Firm maps from FEMA. It was all of $10. So I have all the layers for it, and I've been making some maps for the sea level rise people. And I've also got stuff. I've taken the NRA drawings, and I've placed the buildings in where it's going to be. But, you know, just the... Hi, Gretchen.
Hi.
We had no idea what that noise was.
Something come in.
Yeah.
You saw something come in?
Yeah.
I was banging my keys on the back door, and then I was throwing things out the window.
Didn't even hear nothing on the back door.
Well, the front door banging wasn't working, so I thought the back door might be closer.
Oh, there's a whole
That's why Sheila wasn't here.
So where do we go next with this? I mean, you're obviously on task here, but nobody else is.
Okay. With this. Well, if it would be great if people would get up to speed on it, or you know, have an idea whether you want to go through with something like this. The regulation is mostly written.
I have a question. Have you talked to anyone in Kingston about how it works? How it's been going?
If you want to call the agent there, I had an email exchange with
them. Oh, okay.
How long has it been in place in Kingston?
A year or so.
So they probably haven't had too many.
I don't think they've
had too much going on with it.
I think they ratified the regulations just before FEMA came out with their official changes, which is why there's no AO or AE designation there. They have it now. They have to change their reg to cover that. But at the time, they didn't have any. And she said she was going to change it.
Their regulations seemed to me to be, the way they presented it made a lot of sense. It was about wave action and things like that, in terms of damage to, you know, putting a new building in this floodplain could potentially cause damage to adjacent properties because of things like wave action, deflection of storm, you know, surge energies and things like that. So that's how they kind of couched it. And also because they wanted to make sure that the coastal wetland areas, the salt marshes and things, were able to migrate landward with sea level rise. They wanted to be able to provide that sort of room where possible for those wetland areas as buffers to migrate landward and continue to protect.
One cautionary thing I'd say would be they have a lot more open space in their coastal area than we do, certainly along the Water Street and Merrimack Street. So, things may have to be grandfathered here in ways that wouldn't be grandfathered there, or we might not be able to be as strict about what you can do going forward as maybe they can be, because it's more open space down there.
Right. I mean, we've got a more densely developed downtown.
That's true,
waterfront.
But on the other flip side of that, if you allow people to fill in, there's a lot more damage possibly to happen to adjacent properties. Because
I'm not thinking so much about filling in as I am rebuilding and expanding existing structures, and whether that would be subject to very strict rules or not. I mean, things like the Davis Auto Parts project is an example, maybe, of something like that, where there's an expansion planned, or whatever happens to the New England Development, New England Investment, the CARP project, mm-hmm. if they ever do anything down there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality is, they just need to build the first floor 2 feet above
right.
flood stage. That something like this is not going to stop the NRA from building anything out there. It'll just change what they build, how they build it.
Yeah, I'm not really carrying any water for the NRA either.
No, but I'm just saying in general that it won't stop anything. It'll just make it look different. That's
well, unless there's an increased cost, which prevents it. Which
well,
is,
that, yeah,
that's their problem.
I mean, it also comes down to, in some ways, whether or not we want to get involved in telling people what's good for them, rather than protecting the wetland resource areas. Because if an investor looks at a coastal floodplain with sea level rising and says, I want to build a building there and I'm going to invest all this money in it, I mean, for us to say that's not a good idea, and so we've developed regulations to tell you not to, is different than saying we've developed regulations to protect the functions and values of the resource area.
Oh, but there's a public interest dimension to this,
right.
too, that goes beyond just protecting the resource area. You know, if somebody builds a stupid building in a stupid place, and there's infrastructure that gets destroyed, you know, it's just...
But like I said, this isn't going to tell them that they can't build there. They just have to,
right.
they have to do it in a responsible way that's not going to affect their neighbors. That's my whole point with this, because by definition, it is going to affect the neighbors. It's all the regulations say even incremental changes are not allowed, because even if it raises it an inch, okay, it raises it an inch this decade, it could be a foot and a half. You know,
so what do you do with an existing structure where somebody's proposing an expansion? Do you have a percentage rule, like the Plum Island one? You know, well, if it's more than 50% or more than 25%, then you have to comply.
Well,
I was thinking, that's kind of in the building code now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you right now you have to, for land surface coastal storm flowage, the performance standard is that they meet the state building code for a building in the floodplain, which is your first floor elevation has to be above flood elevation.
So why do we need to do anything then?
Because they can fill it. They can fill it.
You're talking about even infills?
They can
fill.
They can fill to get themselves above base flood elevation.
Oh.
Yeah.
So there's no regulations against that. And so what Joe's saying is that will affect neighboring properties, which but that's one theory. The other theory behind there being no regulations right now for LSCSF is that the ocean is going to accept that extra water. So it's a difference between this being sort of like a flood storage area and that kind of a adverse impact, and the adverse impact that could come from actual wave deflection energy,
mm-hmm.
which is why I thought it made sense that they were talking about being in the velocity zone, and that there were different regulations and stricter regulations where if you were in the velocity zone or if you were in an area that was somehow like isolated, like an island,
mm-hmm.
I forget what they called that, but a hydrologically like restricted zone.
Right.
And it's complicated
but
stuff.
But in the floodplain managers' write-ups, they also discuss damage caused by filling near rivers. This is
but coastal rivers are just are just
they talk rivers in general.
Yeah, well, that's like bordering land subject to flooding regs.
Yeah,
like that would be.
But it's still a confined area in here. It's, you know, it's what, half a mile up the river or a mile up the river up here. So it's still fairly constrained, and there's still the water coming downstream that is all meeting together. So it isn't like it is like it's out in the ocean either. Yeah, if the ocean was just rising with no velocity, yeah, then it would be more like it out there. But it is still constrained here.
So what
it depends on the location and the existing condition.
conditions, though. To say that filling in an area that's a bulkheaded, already filled in area, it doesn't currently provide any flood storage at all. That may have zero effect on any type of flood capacity in the future. And that, what the area that you're talking about, the NRA land, there's a berm mm-hmm. already existing. So filling inside of where that berm currently exists wouldn't affect, wouldn't change anything with regard
well,
to
but berm. There are adjacent areas for water to come in. You know, the boat ramp there next to the Black Cow, water does come in there, and it's made it quite close to that area next to the you know, the parking area.
What did Kingston have as actual performance standards? In other words, so you're in the V zone, or you're, let's say you're in the AO zone in Kingston, and you want to build something. What were those performance standards? Because I can't remember. I don't remember
off the top of my head.
Justification.
Well, I'm assuming yeah. there's no fill. They're not just not allowing fill to. Well, that's not just it, but. And the other part is the area next to the train station has been designated an AE zone too. I don't know all the legal ramifications, whether they can build all out in that area and just say, too bad for you. I know that it's...
The curious thing is that is considered coastal still, even in that far, which...
It's tidal. It is absolutely tidal. It's tidal further up, because I've seen it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what it's designated as. And I know that's going to wreak havoc.
I'm concerned about laying a blanket regulation over a complex, complex series or a complex issue, you know, where you've got all sorts of different type of environments. You've got a much more naturally occurring flood storage environment out by the railroad station, where it seems to me that flooding and that filling in that area could cause serious impact on neighboring properties and marshland. But I honestly don't see where we're doing site work and filling down on the dirt lots of the NRA in particular would have any adverse effect. In fact, I would imagine that an engineer would be able to, if properly engineered, would be able to show that they could evacuate water even more efficiently with proper drainage systems and flood storage capacity systems.
Well, the issue is you're taking away flood storage for the neighboring properties. So it will, by definition, go up. It may not go up a lot. It may very well go up a lot.
But I personally don't agree with the assumption or the contention that provides flood storage.
Well, it's by definition. It's a flood zone. So that's when the waters come in, that's where it's going to go.
But it doesn't go there.
Well, not now.
Not right now, it doesn't.
If the sea level does continue to rise,
it's going to go.
Then all of a sudden that would be the flood storage.
It's already fairly closely come to that. I got plenty of photos. You've seen photos of water coming in around the Black Cow and going up to the, almost up to the light store there. So it's coming. And it's not going down. Not in our lifetimes, at least. So.
But I understand what you're saying, Dan, which is that they're two very different environments when you're talking about like the upstream on the Little River, and you know, the mouth of the Merrimack, basically. And both have the same designation as land subject to coastal storm flowage, but they are going to behave completely differently when there's a flood.
Yeah.
And the impact of having a new building built there is going to be very different in either of those locations as well. So if we're looking at one set of regulations for this one resource area that encompasses some very different environments that are going to behave differently, that's something to think about.
Well, the regulations can allow for those differences. You don't have to have a blanket one-size-fits-all regulation that applies to all coastal zones that may be subject to the regulation in the first place.
Or it could be that the performance standard would be...
Or you can allow for variances.
Or performance standard could be that it has no adverse effect on any abutting property.
Right.
Right.
But, you know, it gets tricky. I mean, it gets complicated.
Right.
Now, obviously, that's a lot more complicated than just having a one-size-fits-all kind of approach to it.
Right.
But in fact, we do have the variance process.
Right.
If they can prove that it's not going to happen, that... That would give us cover to allow something like
it's
that.
It's just that we have to think about that in taking something like the Kingston ordinance and or bylaw and trying to adapt it.
Yeah, the performance standards themselves aren't built just to say no, just to say work with us. If you can show us that it's not going to do any of these things.
And that's basically what it is. Right now we have nothing. Because they can't, they can just say, well, we don't care, there's no regulation, so we do what we want. And we can ask them all we want, and they don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fact. And if we have this, we can tell them you gotta do something. Oh, you've shown us that it's not gonna happen.
Yeah. And they may feel that it's cheaper for them to do it right the first time.
Oh, that's unlikely.
I'm concerned about requiring an applicant to prove something that, based upon a set of assumptions that are unknowable. I mean, we don't know how rapidly sea level is rising. I mean, you can make mathematical predictions based on scientific data, but that's certainly not absolute. I mean, it's controversial. It's not necessarily set in stone.
It isn't that controversial.
Rise, but I mean, it's you can't say that you know what's going on.
It's modeling and theories, and there are different models and there are different theories, right? And not everyone accepts the same ones.
True, but the vast preponderance.
But if we're just using the FEMA designations, that's the standard they have to look at.
Right.
Which at this point is a pretty low standard. You know, particularly, even for right now, it's a low standard, and in 20 or 30 years, it's going to be different. Oh no, it will be. They're measuring. It's happening.
The FEMA maps now, when they have the AB type zones, is that built on current levels?
I think so.
Rather than the 2 foot plus.
It's not the predicted.
I don't know. I don't think it's the predicted stuff. I don't think they're doing that. Because it's, you know...
Well, I think we would want to consider adding that in, say FEMA plus.
FEMA plus?
No, say FEMA plus 2 foot or whatever, above the FEMA lines.
Well, that's the requirement now, I think. It's got to be 2 feet above flood stage.
Right, but how they get there, whether they go in and add 2 feet of dirt.
Right.
Or whether they put it on pilings.
Mm-hmm.
Pilings is sort of the easiest, most efficient way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Then you have to keep all of any flood storage possible.
Mm-hmm.
And not changing any of the abutments. But if they want to do something different than that,
the issue.
Then like
the problem with that is that, I mean, practically speaking, you've got buildings, historic buildings on the waterfront that are at grade.
Mm-hmm.
First floor maybe above base flood elevation, but that's it. And then you're gonna have something next to it up on open pilings.
And that's unfortunately how the world has changed. It's not the same world it was 100 years ago or 200 years ago. That's what we're stuck with at this point. So.
Yeah.
I think we need to read the materials you've sent around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
There is also just recently a very good article in the Globe, and I don't know, someone sent me it by email. I'll check. I'll just forward it to all of you.
Yeah, I have it.
You have it?
Yeah.
What day was that?
Sunday, right?
Was it Sunday? Okay. An interesting article about how Boston, with all the new development on the waterfront and all their efforts over the past decades to focus on the waterfront, are now people are beginning to freak out about the fact that they're on the waterfront and how they're dealing with that. Retrofitting buildings and moving utilities up to higher floors and that kind of thing. It's interesting.
Yeah, they're talking about like waterproof first floors, basically, in case something like Sandy comes up here.
Right.
All right, Sheila has been patiently waiting to ask us about her plastic bag.
Yes,
thing.
I believe that Joe sent you the fire scene document. I'm a member of Citizens for Sustainable Hygiene, and we've been working for well over a year. We've met with the Chamber of Commerce and merchants in town, we've surveyed the merchants in town and residents. We've had showings of the filling bag end, which is very humorous, but itch in the face with the dangers of plastic bags. And Councillor at Large, Barry Connell, is going to bring an ordinance for a ban of PVC bags either this fall or just after the new councillors are sworn in. I'm not sure of the time of that. But this flyer that I have is just a general information flyer, and I'm trying to list at the bottom people who will endorse it and pass some environmental clout. And I figured you were such a group. And I'd love to list you at the bottom if you feel comfortable signing it.
I have some questions. If I walk into the Black Cow to buy some stuff and I don't have my own reusable bag with me, what do they give me?
If we have
this ban in place.
Wait, does the Black Cow have a store?
The Black Cow?
Takeout.
I'm sorry, the Black Dog.
This takeout would not be covered.
No, I'm talking about a
convenience
store. CVS, let's take CVS. What do they put my stuff in that I can take home?
They could have bags that they could offer you that were reusable. They could sell you a bag. It's going to take a change of lifestyle.
So what are the merchants? You said you talked to the merchants. What do they say about this?
Most of them are in support of either a fee or a ban.
A fee? A consumer fee, you mean?
A fee that would be charged if you didn't have your own bag.
Oh, okay.
And you would get money back if you did have your own bag.
Mm-hmm.
But we decided to go for the ban because it seemed like the fee would just be too onerous for the merchants and for city government to administer.
What size fee? About a quarter bag or something like that?
Could be a nickel. And a nickel bag.
So
I mean, they still use the plastic bags
for
charging a nickel?
What?
I mean, they would still get used the old plastic bag, but
no, they would use a better grade bag that would not be aerodynamic and
so are there better bags in play now that stores are using? I'm just not familiar with the technology.
Are there
merchants that are using these better bags now?
There are sturdier bags that are more than single use.
Where do you see those? Where do you find those?
I don't do much shopping, I'm sorry, so I can't.
I just need to clarify. So a ban rather than the fee would mean that merchants would not even be able to offer you a plastic bag. They wouldn't have them. They wouldn't have them because they're banned. So if someone came in, like a tourist during Yankee Homecoming, goes into Richdale's or goes into CVS or somewhere and buys a whole assortment of things,
mm-hmm.
and gets to the register, they don't have a bag. They don't have a bag, and CVS doesn't have a bag to sell them what they're buying.
They probably would end up having a bag. We're thinking about having merchants come together with a logo for Newburyport that they could all carry.
A bag. Well, so there would be a bag. There would be bags. There would just be different bags.
Right.
See, I think that's the piece that's missing from your one-page
And who pays for the different bags?
Is the practicality of this. I see the conservation elements. That's what your handout addresses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all fine, but I think the practicality of it and how you get from point A to point B is important for the merchants and it's important for the consumers and ultimately for the city council that has to act on this.
Right.
That's why I have concerns about.
So what are you saying is missing? I don't know
how this would work, Sheila, in terms of the real world.
I have one more. I have one more question about the bags too. If you're saying that there would be different bags, so they would still have bags, they would just be different bags. They'd be sturdier bags, reusable bags.
Reusable bags.
But then, who pays for those? Does the merchant then have to spend all kinds of money to stock themselves up with sturdy reusable bags that they're just going to give away?
No, they sell them to them.
They'd have to sell you the bags.
How does this work in the municipalities that you mentioned there that have already done it?
That's what I was wondering.
Because I tried to log on. I tried to get, I forget which one it was. I tried to
get an order. Well, Manchester is the most recent, and we don't know yet how it's working there.
How about Cambridge? Is it Cambridge?
I can't imagine.
No, it's not Cambridge. It's Brookline, Great Barrington, and Manchester.
Brookline was the one. I couldn't find it in Brookline's. But it'd be nice to know just how it works, what the mechanics of it are.
Yeah. Oh,
field trip?
Yeah.
No, I would really like to see what's going
on. Yeah, I'm going to Manchester on Sunday.
Or on the other side as they have around town.
Mm-hmm. I'm personally all for it because I don't take bags. If I forgot my reusable bag, I just juggle.
It's hard to go back to using them once you.
I think what you don't want to see is, a plastic bag replaced a paper bag because we didn't want to get all the trees cut down. And even now at the supermarket, you have a choice. You can still get your groceries in paper bags.
Right.
Or you can get the plastic bags.
Right.
So, I don't think anybody should want to see the plastic bags go away and have all these paper bags be available.
Right. There's an initiative that's going to be starting up at the end of this month. It's called My Echo. And it's a company that's going to be working with Shaw's, which of course is not where most of Newburyport shops, but all of the Shaw's have signed on to this program. They've developed a little, I forget what you call the little thing that can be scanned and it represents.
Barcode.
It's not like a UPC code, it's a different.
Until 2D, the 2D scan.
Yeah, I know. You can scan it with
your
phone.
Your smartphone.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. It works on a smartphone. And people will be able to download the free application that they can use, and they'll choose a nonprofit organization that they are in love with. And the money that they've saved by not using the bag will go to that organization. So they're working with the schools to do it. They're starting to work with the schools now. So we're thinking it'd be a great way to train people to get out of the habit of using those bags, to get in the habit of bringing other things. And the application has all kinds of neat things, like it says, you've saved 6 bags, and it can generate that based on the volume of what you bought, I guess, and the kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
There's no personal information stored, but they can store everything, they can store all this information and report it back to the city when it's done.
Is this brand new in the other two communities as well, besides Manchester, Brookline, and Great Barrington? Or is there any experience there of how it works?
What, My Echo or
the van?
The van? I don't know the specifics of that.
See, the nice thing about the reusable bags that people bring to the stores is it's voluntary compliance. And, if you don't have one with you, they'll still give you a bag. And a van just sounds a lot different to me.
What was the problem with the fee? With starting with a fee that would be an incentive for people to continue to bring their own bags and for more people to bring their own bags?
It seems to me that the record keeping that the merchant has to do and that the city has to do is just.
Why does it have to be record keeping?
Because they have to be able to tally it up and then send the records. Because the money that they collect goes into an account. They don't keep it. Or they keep part of the money.
Oh. What if they could keep the money that they collect?
Yeah, they're buying the bag.
I mean, I remember years ago, 10 years ago, in Cambridge at Bread and Circus, which is now Whole Foods, if you brought your own bag, you got a discount on your groceries because you weren't taking one of their bags. So that was just internal to their business operation.
Yeah, if you buy
so
a bag of Whole Foods,
why can't this
now,
be internal to... It's a benefit. I'm sure the merchants would love it. They'd make whatever 5 cents a bag that you use, but it would send a message to the consumer, I don't want to pay for my bag, for these bags, I'm going to remember next time to bring my bags from home. Maybe that's sort of like, it's like a pay as you throw kind of thing with trash collection. I don't know. It seems like a simpler way to start.
Well, we have the two ordinances that we're going to give to the city council, mm-hmm. but then
yeah.
the subcommittee that will
okay.
study it.
Gotcha.
Our preference was for the ban.
Gotcha.
And I was surprised because I feel the same way. I thought ban is, too pushy.
Right.
So and how far reaching is it? I mean, we get two newspapers delivered to our door.
It would not affect those newspapers.
It was inclement weather, they're in a plastic bag.
Well, okay, fair enough. The bags that are affected are the two-handled, lightweight bags that you get at the checkout. And really, it doesn't affect most of our downtown merchants. We're after Market Basket, Shaw's, CVS, Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the big stores are the ones that are doing it. And they'll be less amenable to kind of incentive you're saying, I think.
Yeah, did any of you folks go to there was a site visit around the Red Barn on Crow Lane one time, and they were where they used to take the recycling stuff. On either side of that barn, all the bushes, everything in the wetland there that they're rehabilitating now, it was covered in plastic bags. Just these sorts of plastic bags. It was amazing.
So let me ask a question. I go to Market Basket and I frequently forget to bring my own bag. So I get half a dozen of their bags, and I use them as trash bags and put them in, put them out in the trash. So if I don't get those, then I have to buy plastic bags to put in the trash can, which go out in the trash. What am I saving?
Well, there will still be lots of bags that you can use. The people mentioned picking up their dog poop also.
Right.
What am I going to use? We'll still have bread bags,
I use the newspaper bags for the dog poop, so that won't be a problem.
Right, so there's still be plenty of bags that you can use.
But one place I go is Market Basket. I never go anywhere else and get them occasionally at Walmart. But, I'm just replacing one plastic bag with another.
Reuse them, but probably most people don't.
Right,
most people, and
yeah,
they
I
end
reuse
up.
Them. Well, even the grocery stores have a bin you can bring the bags
exactly.
back and
right.
give them, but very few people do that.
Right. Well, it's because
yeah.
I use them.
You can go to the bin and get more.
Yeah.
It's hard to find out how well they're recycled. And they're just downcycled and not recycled. But how many bags get returned there and how?
Oh, not many, I don't think, based upon what goes out.
Hmm?
Very few get returned.
Yeah.
As opposed to what goes out.
Yeah.
And I'd be willing to bet, Steve, you use a lot more plastic using those bags than you do if you would use a trash can liner. They don't, because you're tying them up, there's a lot of wasted bag in that. And
yeah,
I would bet that.
Well, the other thing is,
we have very little trash to begin with.
Well, yeah.
There are occasionally weeks
too.
Where I don't even put it out because it's not worth it.
Right. Right.
But if people are going out and buying plastic bags to use in their trash cans, then those bags are being used in trash cans because that's what they're purchased specifically for.
Right.
So then those are being used for a purpose and they go and they do their thing. I think that the issue that people are concerned about, and a conservation commission might be concerned about plastic bags, the kind that go everywhere from every store, is that they end up in wetlands. They end up floating around in the ocean, in lakes and streams and ponds and trees, because for the ones that you might reuse at home, there's probably 2,000 that go out in the atmosphere. So.
And they
yes.
they break.
I know they're there, but how do they
yeah.
get there? You take the bag from the grocery store, you take it home. How does it end up in the wetland?
Because people don't pay attention to it as much as you do. It just it gets blown out there.
Well, also trash cans outside. Who knows? Birds, animals,
they're
pull
everywhere.
Them apart. Yeah.
I think maybe eliminating some of the plastic bags is a great idea, but I just have trouble with the ban idea, the ban concept. I'd like to see some other approach to compliance that
doesn't involve a citywide ban.
The ECHO Plus program that you mentioned sounds like a good incentive program, which is probably going to be the most effective way without having to institute a ban. It's a bit more of a carrot versus the stick method of motivating people to change their habits and behavior.
To me, it's sort of like cigarette smoking in public or in restaurants. That was bad for all of us, and many people felt that it shouldn't be legislated, but it finally was, and I think most people agree. This is a problem that's affecting all of us. Not only us, but the other beings who share this planet with us, and I feel so horrible about how many of them are dying because of our laziness.
Yeah, because when the bags break down, they break down into smaller and smaller pieces, but it takes a real long time for them to actually
they get eaten,
go away.
They strangle animals, you know, it's just hard.
Well, we could just pass a resolution or whatever that we support efforts to minimize the use of plastic bags. Because it's not up to us to say whether there's going to be a tax on it or a fee or however
it's
going to be implemented.
Mm-hmm. Well, do I hear a motion?
I'm happy to do that, but I'm not happy about putting our endorsement on the bottom of this sheet that calls for a ban. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then
we can just send to City Council a letter then saying that we support any efforts to reduce the use of plastic bags.
Well, reasonable efforts, not any efforts.
It encompasses
ban is an effort, and I wouldn't.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't want anybody to misconstrue what we're saying or not saying.
No, seriously.
So let's talk about then how you want it to be worded specifically. What did you say originally about it?
That we are in support of any reasonable effort to minimize the use of plastic bags in our city.
Do you want to put a reason why? You want to, you know, make a statement about why you think it's important?
Well,
because they end up in the environment.
Yeah.
City Commission will support any reasonable efforts to minimize use of plastic bags in the city of Newburyport.
Reasonable
because,
and practical, I would say.
Yeah. A reduction in the use of plastic bags will
have a positive effect on the environment.
Something like that. Okay, I'll make it very general, like a very broad.
Put it in the usual conservation ease.
I only heard a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So we'll thanks for coming in, discussing with us, and we'll send something off to. We'll probably if we'll delay it until this actually comes up.
Yeah. Why don't I draft something and bring it back to the next meeting?
I think that's a good idea.
You know, because
yeah.
We'll just make sure that
in the cold light of day.
Yeah, yeah. I'll draft something. I'll email it around, or I'll bring it back to the next meeting.
I'll consider supporting something.
Okay, yeah.
I'd like to read up on how the implementation went in Brookline.
What's that?
I'd like to read up on how the implementation went in Brookline.
And in it's Manchester by the Sea banned them? Mm-hmm. Band? Okay, because I'm going to be there
on the most
Sunday, and I will go into a store and try to buy something.
Go
shopping. I don't have a bag.
Go shopping, buy food.
Yeah.
And you can charge it all to our expenses.
I will, absolutely. Thank you, Paul. I'm
going to Manchester.
I'm
going to
be there around dinner time.
There's going to be a store that has plastic bags.
Yeah. I'm actually going there to buy a puppy of all things. So I don't think he's going to come in a plastic bag, but I will make sure on my way there to stop. Mm-hmm.
You could go to Great Barrington, you know, for a week. That would be good.
Yeah.
Bring the puppy.
But yeah, I think plastic bags.
I'd be curious as to how the AG's office reacts to these bylaw changes. I mean, you know, they had a real problem with a plastic water bottle issue.
Oh, did it?
That came up in Concord. Mm. But apparently this passes muster because these are all towns and they all have adopted it.
Concord banned plastic water bottles?
Of a certain size. Certain size water bottles you weren't allowed to buy in Concord.
Interesting.
But I think the AG blew it off.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. One area of it.
That's another biggie.
But we're not subject to the review.
Right.
Since we're sitting, but still.
Yeah. Well, obviously they got it. They got it approved.
Yeah,
several places. So.
Yes.
And now, if you guys all went to the Mac conventions, you'd have a car full of reusable bags because that's about all they give away there.
Are they sturdy bags though?
Yes. Oh, they're sturdy ones. Well, they're fine. And if they break down, you go back the next convention.
Actually, CVS ones are pretty sturdy.
Mm-hmm. So. All right. Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you very much for your time.
I'd like to know how many natural resources are being used to manufacture all these sturdy reusable plastic bags.
Well, but there's a lot of cloth ones too.
Yeah.
So a lot of the ones at Mac are cloth, but you know we've got some of the big mesh ones that they last forever. Thank you. All right. On to certificates of compliance, requests for determinations, minor modifications. First one is Victor Cole and Heather Batchelder, 5 Plum Island Turnpike.
Yes.
Minor modification.
Did you all receive that package? Essentially, they're not here tonight, but essentially it is one step that's necessary for safety purposes around the bottom of the deck that they proposed, that we approved as a minor change about a year ago. They're getting ready to build it, and Gary said this needs a step. And so that's what this is. It's pretty minor. And the entire project is still a reduction from the original footprint with the swimming pool and the patio and all that kind of thing.
I'll make a motion to consider this a minor modification.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
next thing. Can I get a motion?
Motion to open the public hearings.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. First item is the City of Newburyport Bartlett Mail Commission, 149 High Street, notice of intent.
Okay, so at our last meeting, they were here with the notice of intent. You might remember Walt was here as a representative from the Bartlett Mall Commission, Bartlett Mall Commission, and the one thing that we were waiting for was the file number. You approved it, or, you know, in principle, approved it. It's basically two inch hand dug, you dig it with a spoon, trench for the little aeration pipe for the aerators, and you may also remember this from the application that you got from them. Walt put it together himself. He submitted an RDA and an NOI. And he put the RDA on top because he was confused and he was doing it all himself and by hand. And he sent it all to DEP. And there's still no file number that has been issued.
Because they're confused.
I think because they're confused. And I think because they thought it was an RDA and put it aside and never issued a file number, because that's what happens with RDAs. So we have an RDA. The RDA has been sent to DEP. They have clearly no comments on it. The commission now, Walt has sent us a request. He's emailed me today saying, please withdraw the NOI and request that the commission vote on the RDA as submitted with all, you know, attached plans and other supporting materials. So it's the same project, same details, same plan, all that, but it would be an RDA instead of a NOI.
Aside from maybe reseeding the excavated area, are there any other conditions that we would want to consider, impose, or discuss?
It's not much else.
There's not much else.
Just going to do that and put it in, and it's, you know, they're taking care of the place. They want it to look nice too.
Yeah.
So
He had the erosion controls marked on the plan. We might want to say something like, if any additional work is to take place within the frog pond itself, related to installation of the aerators, that additional information be provided to the Conservation Commission. Who knows? Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure the trench is, you know, seated in a grassy area now. Is it
goes right down. It's almost a little gravelly kind of
area.
I thought you said
it was gravelly.
It's where the little choo-choo train goes around.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think this approval was an RDA.
Yeah. This is totally separate from those, that other thing that he...
Right. Yes.
This is not the Peapod thing.
Did we approve that?
We did. Well, we approved that as a pilot test. It's a pilot project.
Motion to issue a -3.
Okay, so -3 with conditions for, you know, reseeding and maintaining erosion controls. That's it. Okay. Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Okay. One sec. I'm so good. I'm remembering. Remembering the sheet.
Will there be issued a return for funds submitted with the application for the NOI?
They were exempt. So it's actually, it's procedurally, this ends up being not as complicated as it could be because they're exempt from the fees. They've already sent everything to DEP. Is why ordinarily I don't think it would be so easy to do this kind of thing, but...
Do we have to take any action on the withdrawal of the NOI since we started hearing on it?
Actually, that's a good point. We should probably vote to
accept
his request for withdrawal of the NOI and close that public hearing.
Okay. Move to do both.
Second to do both.
All in favor on both?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
But what happens if DEP at some point discovers they have...
Too late. We've already accepted the withdrawal.
Right, so they withdrew it.
I'll call Pam Merrill at DEP. I'll let her know what we did. And just keep it in the RDA file.
They probably did it today.
Yeah. Okay, the next item is Department of Public Services, 570 Merrimack Street, notice of intent, and they have asked for another continuance.
What now?
They've gotten their determination, but they need to do the test borings, and they're going to come back.
Have they done that?
No, they haven't done that. They'll come back.
So is that?
He said he thinks that they should be ready for our next meeting, August 20th. We'll continue to August 20th.
Motion to so continue.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion to close the public hearings?
I move to close the public hearings.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Are you abstaining, Mary?
Aye.
Okay, enforcement and violations, 372 Merrimack Street update.
Okay, the update on that is that they have cleaned the swales, they have reseeded the areas adjacent to the parking lot, and they are currently putting together engineering drawings that show that certify the elevations at the bottoms of the swales and of the culverts. So I believe they're working on those engineering drawings currently. So we'll get those when they're done. And I'm having a site visit out there with them this week to go over it all. So things are looking a lot better. And I was out there about a week and a half ago during a rainstorm, a pretty good rainstorm, and the water was flowing in the right direction out of the wetland at Ashland Street and towards the other side of the parking lot. So I watched it. It was flowing. I hope that it still is.
Well, may I speak to that issue for a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Rob Germanaro to Ashland Street. I had so much hope for this project, I really did. And I'm so glad to hear that you're gonna have a site visit, because what they did shortly thereafter, the last meeting, is they went gangbusters. And I've never seen the ditch so clean and operating so correctly. Friday the 20th of July, if I'm not mistaken, they went in and they cleaned. Saturday the 21st, they cleaned the entire ditch up, all truckload after truckload of stuff out, because they piled them on the back of line. Hauled truckload after truckload of 3/4-inch stone, with the correct, what you call the stuff in the bottom of the trench,
mm-hmm.
The drainage well. They didn't clean the culverts out at that point, but they spent probably 10 hours there on a Saturday, to their credit. I've never seen it flow that good except the 1998 with myself and my contractor friend cleaned it out, and we took a foot and a half of water off the actual street property. And I had a lot of hope for this. It didn't look like they finished it. It looked like they ran out of time. They finished the first ditch closest to Ashland Street,
mm-hmm.
half of the second ditch, and kind of a little bit in the third swale, I should call it, swale.
Okay.
And I actually called the contractor. I said, just curious, are you folks planning on coming back? And they said, yeah, we're coming back next Saturday. I said, great. I just wondered if you could go a little further towards Ashland Street, because it looks as though they dug it out, just left a big swath of no stone in there, about 10 feet. And the guy said, we'll see the super up there on Saturday and talk to him. And then on Tuesday, I noticed the guy out there cleaning the culverts up with the power jet. Did a fantastic job, cleaned that up. And so I had hoped to run into him on Saturday. But when I came on Friday night from work, I looked and I saw the ditch completely done. Thousands upon thousands of dollars of rocks and all kinds of stuff in there. And what they did is they finished the 3/4 stone, the entire ditch, and then they put in this great big, what I call sea stone, like trap rock, and they put it about a foot or so higher than the end of the culverts, up to the culverts, kind of like this around the culvert openings. And although the water does flow, it doesn't flow like you saw it flow, Julia. Right now, to see that, all one has to do is go there with a little common sense and stand and look at the ditch, and the culvert's ends are almost filled to the top, about this far down from the top, and the water just sits there standing.
So you're saying they added more stone in front of the culverts, like to block the culverts?
The entire swale, Julie, a tremendous amount of stone, a foot higher than the actual bottom.
It wasn't like that. That's funny.
It was flowing so good. I had so much hope. That Saturday, I planned to run into the guy. And if he said, look, we're not going another 10 feet towards the property.
I wonder if they like had extra stone and just threw it in there.
It is an extra stone. I'm talking about tremendous amounts of truckloads of stone, enormous amounts of sea stone, the entire length of the
doesn't make any sense. Why would they do that? Any sense?
For erosion control purposes to keep.
Well, you can see that it's
flowing. Doesn't make any sense.
It does flow from the first ditch a little bit. And then the second ditch, you can see that it doesn't come out of the culvert.
Interesting.
Yeah,
well, it's supposed to rain on Thursday.
It's
supposed to rain on Thursday night, Friday. So I'll check it out then. But I'll go out there and take a look and see what I can figure out.
You should have one of the representatives.
Oh, they're coming. Oh, yeah. I'm meeting with them.
So, I got to be honest with you. I dread coming in here as much as some of you may dread seeing me.
I thought you were going to be so happy. I was so excited to tell
so
you.
Well, it flows probably as bad as it did when it was full of all the silver stuff, but it looks fantastic. It looks absolutely fantastic.
It's unfortunate that they shouldn't have kept on going, because there at one point they had it going the right way.
And it looked, if you saw what I saw, you saw some of that black silt exposed, and then it looks like they were going to come back and finish it with 3/4-inch stone. It was level with the bottom of the culverts, you know, the inverts. It's not the best drainage swim in the world, but it was functioning as good as I've seen.
The water was right through.
I couldn't agree with you more.
So now it's worse than it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago?
All you have to do is look at the end of the culvert.
Yeah.
It comes out of the first crossing to the back grab.
This is fine, because I'm going out there, I'm meeting with them, they're putting together engineering drawings, so they're going to have to show these new inverts, and we'll take care of it.
I mean,
sounds like they spent a lot of money to make it worse.
They have, they're spending, you're right, they're spending a lot of money, and now they're hiring an engineer. They haven't yet brought in the engineers, they've just been using Asphalt Services, and I got to say, I'm going to agree with you, these guys at Asphalt Services have been very diligent about what they've been doing out there. I don't know why they took it to this other level, but
maybe they don't know what they're doing.
I think that's part of it, and that they did need an engineer maybe to finish the off.
I noticed there was a big machine down today in the back of the lawn.
Well, there's an environmental company that leases middle space to, and I thought it's a boring machine.
Oh.
And I thought they were going to do some boring, but I think they just left it overnight. They had phones around it last night. You know, I gotta say that in 1985, whenever they expanded the back parking lot, this is when the problem started. They did that to appease the Conservation Commission at the time and put some sign, sort of a, you know, that's they didn't, you know, they replicated a certain amount of wetlands, they gave a swale, they gave it a try, but. If you recall, almost 30 years ago, they were the largest employer in the city. I mean, that whole parking lot is questionable to begin with, yet it's there, so it's existing. I can appreciate that. And they've had their chances. A couple of times, they've had chances to make this thing right.
I think this is just going to take some tweaking. I think they're on the right path. Their effort is there. Their intention is to get the thing done and have it be done, and then they'll just have to maintain it. So I think it might take some tweaking at this point to get it where we want it, but we will.
Julie, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you said and saw what I saw, that it's floating that good.
Yeah.
If you can honestly tell me on a site visit that is the best that ditch will
reason.
I won't come in again.
Right, no.
But I just don't think you could say that without... You know,
there's no reason to let them off the hook until it's perfect. At this point, they're out there. They got the guys out there. They got the equipment. They'll just make it right, and we'll.
And speaking to that looming and seeding, you know, originally that parking lot. I mean, I know that I would be held, and anyone else, especially in this great city, to a higher standard. They should be forced to loom and seed from the edge of the hot dog. Anyone else who would be
in
the parking lot would be.
They are.
But they haven't done it.
They will. They will be.
Okay. I mean, it is August. I understand it's not the time to grow grass. September or October is optimal. But,
yeah.
You You know, either the guy sat right in the other room.
It's it. We got it in writing. We got it in writing. It's part of the plan. It's part of the enforcement.
I mean, I don't know. If you spend $250,000, you're down to the last $10,000 or less. Let's finish it the right way. Why don't we do it the right way? They've done a beautiful job. They've just done it completely backwards.
Yeah, they're not finished.
Okay. So, what I expect to be able to come in at next meeting and have another update.
Yep.
Please, you're going to look at it every day. You're going to have a say.
Yeah.
I think they should go another 10 feet towards Ashland Street with the stones, and I think that
they're not going to go off their property, but they can complete it to the edge of their property.
And that would be another 10 feet towards Wiley, and they just left it all dug out and nothing in it.
Okay. I'll take a look.
My property line is the fence line to the Phil and Sons. If you could draw a straight line from Merrimack Street looking straight back, which is essentially that hay bale line.
It's where they had the hay bales, exactly.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay.
But you can see that they get another 10 feet that they could put some stone in and they didn't do it.
All right. I see what you're saying.
I really do. I hate coming in and bothering you folks. I really do. But I want to put this thing to bed. I mean, I've been working on this for 19 years.
One more meeting.
But what are you going to do when it's all taken care of?
Well, I think you're all pretty reasonable people. I really feel like I'm on the phone on your side, but I really think it isn't done. And I think we can get it done, right? I don't understand why they haven't done it. They've done it the hard way and wasted tons of money here. Foolishness.
Okay. Yeah. Looks like there may be just a little further to go.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Go.
A couple of things while I've been driving around town. I was driving south on 95 one afternoon, coming home, and they've got this huge crane now on their
barge.
On the Amesbury side now.
No, on the Newburyport side.
The big crane, yeah.
And they had driven a barge up onto the beach and were loading stuff onto it.
Driven a barge up onto the beach?
Well, the beach. The wetlands.
The resource area.
The resource area.
Onto the bank?
Mm-hmm. Now, I only saw that once, but I'm going to drive by there.
Oh, I wish you had a camera.
Yeah, we send one up.
Well, I was on 95. I wasn't going to
stop. Yeah, right. Really? All right.
We should have set up a camera there.
It looks like a war zone.
I went down there and I saw the staging area. I saw the Jersey barrier. I mean, they have the thing. They have that area.
They've done a good job there, but I just was, I haven't seen any progress on building the dock, and then I saw.
Oh, right, exactly. I keep waiting for the pier to be constructed.
Yeah, so
tonight's barge is gone, and there is no pier.
FYI. And the last time I was down there, Paul Covey hadn't done anything about the sedimentation around the water.
No, yeah. I know. Yeah, send him an email. Okay.
Okay,
thank
so
you.
That was one.
Yeah.
Or actually two. The house on Low Street that used to have the moose in the wetlands.
Yeah.
That place is sold. People are living in the house.
I talked to the guy about it.
Okay.
They have to make some changes to the plans. I mean, well, they have to make some.
Well, they haven't removed the phragmites. That's my issue.
They haven't. He thought that they were done and ready for a certificate of compliance. I had to pull out the approved plan and show him that they have not. They are not done.
Right. And some of that phragmites is on the neighbor's land, and at the time it was all family and it wasn't going to be an issue.
Right.
Just saying.
No, I know. He knows.
Okay.
So they were able to transfer the deed with the...
Well, they never filed the order of conditions with the registry, in which case they wouldn't have known that there were outstanding order of conditions. But
then
the,
all
the
work that they
did,
yeah,
wondered, did the new
was illegal
have any idea
at that point.
Well, it may be in the family. I mean, you don't know who took the deed. It could be still in the family.
Still.
So they may have not have cared.
I talked to him about 3 weeks ago, let's say, and I don't think this sale had gone through yet.
Well, the signs are all down, and there are people visiting the house.
Were there for sale signs?
Yeah, there was a for
I don't know
sale
if it has sold, though, because
Well, there was a sale pending sign, and then, I don't know what it is, it's,
you know,
but the sign's gone now.
No, but one of the issues really is you give the order of conditions to the landowner and say, go record it, and then we never check
then
back.
They have to send us the sheet.
Yeah, and what if they don't?
Do we
have any tickler file on that
no.
kind of stuff?
No, but they're supposed to then notify you 48, depending on what the order of conditions says, 48 hours, 24 hours prior to their start of work. So you know, and they're supposed to put up the DEP file number sign and all that, so you know they've started the work. You go out to check on it. If you don't have the recorded certificate in the file, then they're not working under a valid permit. It's not recorded.
Yeah, but you know, we don't have the resources.
So,
I mean,
well,
maybe now we do, but because it's not so busy, but when things get busy, we don't have the resources go bird dog these things
mm-hmm.
all the way along.
And a lot of times you find out someone's halfway done with their project and they haven't told you that they started yet. And sometimes 3.5 years go by and someone still hasn't started. And they haven't, and maybe they don't even intend to start. So you can't be on the phone all day long asking people, are you going to start? When are you going to start? Are you going to do the project or not? What are you thinking? You know, you have to kind of put something on them that they are going to do what they're supposed to do. So I've started putting in a cover letter, a reminder of the specific conditions in the order of conditions that they need to, well, there's always been a reminder that they need to record it. Now there's a reminder that they need to, of informing me when they need to start work, prior to start of work.
I thought you said they wouldn't issue a building permit until it...
Well, then what happens is they'll come up and get a bill. If they come to get the building permit from Gary and they come up and I sign off on the building permit,
right.
Then I say to them, oh, so you guys going to start work? When, you know, what's your schedule? Are you going to get your DEP sign? And this is usually the contractor at this point who might not even know. And then I have to pull out the order of the conditions for him and that
but
kind
if
of
you
thing.
Don't have recording information back from the registry, you'll still sign off on the building permit?
Maybe that should be the trigger. Yeah. At the time when someone comes up, I'll sign it.
So in this file, is there a recording?
But I probably should wait to see that they've got their That'll make them do it really fast.
Because when the contractor runs back and says, I can't do this, you didn't file a thing and they don't have
that's
that.
That's the right checkpoint.
Can't think of any other way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So does this file have a recording from the registry?
I'll have to check the file.
Because I don't see how it could have passed the title search without it.
Right.
But, you know, depending on where how the transfer was done, it may not have been, might have been intra-family thing.
Or it could be that whoever bought it, their lawyer, talked to the other guy's lawyer and said, oh, yeah, we haven't done this yet, but there's no problem. You know. They bought. That's happened before.
We refinanced
the guy
like four
from
times.
That bought the place and, you know, there was no certificate of compliance and there were problems with what had been done. And,
mm-hmm.
and he just went ahead with it and bought it.
Yeah, we refinanced a bunch of times, and usually with the same people. But and then we went and got a home equity loan, and the lawyer from there said the guy had never put in the paperwork to say that we bought the house in the first place and paid it the first time. And then it was like it was like pulling teeth to get the lawyer to do it for us. We had to threaten him with action to do it.
I feel like I did check this when he came in. I feel like because we had a discussion about they're going to need the certificate of, the new buyer is going to want to see the certificate of compliance before they take this on because they're not going to want to take on this liability. We had this conversation. So I'm thinking that I feel like I did have it open and saw that it was recorded.
Okay.
But I will double check.
And one other thing. Turning on the subject, what's left to do? They haven't moved
right. Yeah, they just didn't do a couple pieces. There was some question also about whether or not the plan was amended along the way. Do you guys remember them doing an amendment to
relocating
the driveway? Well, that was a small change just at the curb cut,
right?
But was there something else that was amended? He said something
I think
like
they did something that where they ended up a little further away from
yeah.
the
yeah.
And what
they
he
tweaked
what,
it a little
what
bit.
He was telling me was that when they tweaked it, that eliminated the encroachment, which was what required the replication?
No. It never came up in any discussion.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go back and find the minutes.
It'll be pretty obvious in the drawings where they were. They had
that driveway is so close to the wetlands. I mean, it's
right.
practically in it.
Right.
The condition, I don't think, was based on any encroachment. It was just to get rid of the fried mites.
Okay, I'll go back and look at all that.
And it all would have been solved if they put the driveway on the other side. But they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, right. So the existing circumstance is that they're not yet done.
Is the moose
and
still
they
there?
Don't, they have not yet requested a certificate
no,
of compliance.
The
so
moose is
it's
gone.
Still hanging.
The moose is gone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Moose.
It's
it dresses up for Super Bowl.
I mean, they have.
It's on the other side.
It migrated
yeah.
to the pastures.
The moose, yeah, the moose is gone. That was a good landmark. Now it's hard to.
What other side's it on? The other side
the
of what?
The other side of the house.
Oh, okay. Wow.
I
guess I thought I'd seen it.
Looking where it was.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just the inside.
And they dress it up for Super Bowl.
Do
and
they?
Other occasions.
Oh, I've got to do that.
If you had a moose in your front yard, you would too.
I would dress it up.
On Parker Street,
oh, God.
Across from Shepherd's Auto,
yeah.
We at one time denied a project there.
I remember that because I think I was on the commission.
And then DEP approved it for a building.
Yeah.
But they're using it as a parking lot.
Right,
that's right.
Is that okay? We approved the use, I guess DEP approved it as a.
Well, the question is, has their permit expired? Depending on what year, though, there have been two permit extension acts.
Yeah.
So it could be that their permit's not yet expired and that. Depends on how long
they
want to use
Lisa Mead not working for them.
No, I don't think it was.
No, that was the Graff
Road. That was Graff Road, yeah. That was further up there, the one that I yelled
this,
at. Her.
This predated our tenure.
Oh, okay.
Yours and mine.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember.
Yeah, we denied it.
Because it wouldn't make the building smaller.
But Steve, isn't it really a land use thing?
And there was
that,
a stream.
You know,
well, there was, I mean, there was all sorts
yeah.
of stormwater.
But DEP made
them
make the building smaller.
It's just a gravel park.
Did exactly what we asked.
It's not an issue, but it's just curious.
It's got a few cars and a couple of boats in there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, we didn't grant them. Well, actually, it's a superseding, so it's out of our hands, too.
But that parking lot's been there a while now.
Ever
paved?
Since he got the permit. He cleared
paved?
It. And
I think it's gravel.
No, it's all
gravel.
Gravel.
It's
gravel.
Yeah.
So it's probably not doing anything.
I don't think it's going to trigger any alarm bells because it would be considered like they've started work, but yet they're just paused and they're allowed to do that under, you know, during the duration of their permit, and since their permit is still in effect, I would guess, given that they've all been extended for like 6 years. That's going to be okay. Unless there are some conditions in the superseding order that require erosion controls to be maintained at all times. Which, you know.
Might be, I didn't see any.
Right. Okay.
Can I ask Pam now?
Yeah, I will.
Of course, at least there's less fried mites there. Anything else?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Don't care.
Next meeting is on